This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the March 14th edition. Is it the 14th? Yes, it is. March 14th edition of InvestTalk, and I do appreciate you being with you, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor is what we're about. We try to answer your questions live during this hour, 4-5 Pacific Time. Or you can leave your questions on the 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART is that number. And we'll get to it. We're going to get to the calls in just a minute. Today, the right account types can reduce the drag of taxes and exert more control over taxable events. That's a mouthful. But the right account, assets location, the asset location using the right types of accounts. So we're talking about IRAs versus joint versus, you know, SEPs versus 401k. That's going to be our main talking point today. Hopefully it's not too difficult of a topic to cover. On InvestTalk, we try to help you with the grasp, the essentials of the basics of investing. And today with so many financial products available, it's pretty challenging. Now, mutual funds are the most popular of these products. Even though ETFs are gaining on them, still mutual funds by far are still the most popular. Okay? And do you know that there's two basic kinds? There's an open-end mutual fund and a closed-end mutual fund. Do you know the difference? It can be confusing. Both funds allow investors to invest in professionally managed portfolios of securities. Although many features of these two vehicles are similar, there are major differences that can affect performance. Now, we're talking about a mutual fund. Now, mutual fund usually holds a bunch of positions, right? So we're talking about that mutual fund that owns all these different things inside, stocks, bonds, it could, whatever it is. A closed-end mutual fund, issues a fixed number of shares, like an IPO, a public offering. And it takes the money when they issue those shares, it takes that money and they invest that money into the securities, stocks, preferreds, municipal bonds, whatever it is their prospectus says they're going to invest. And then allocation mix and trading strategy follows whatever it described in that prospectus. The price of the fund will depend on supply and demand of its shares. It doesn't depend on the value of the holdings. An open-end fund also invests in the same assets as a closed-end fund. But an open-end fund, it's not an IPO. They're not a fixed amount of shares. They're an unlimited number of shares, and the company that is running the mutual fund offers the number of shares that people buy it. And they take that money and they invest in the assets. Now, let me see if I can explain this simply. Let's say you have two mutual funds. One's a closed-end and one's an open-end. And let's further say they both have the exact same company, stocks. And let's even make it simpler. Let's say they only have one stock. There are two mutual funds, one's open-end, one closed-end, and they have one stock. Okay? One. Let's say it's Tesla, just to pick a company. And that asset value of that fund will sell at exactly whatever the price of Tesla stock is. That's an open-end mutual fund. In a closed-end mutual funds, the net asset value is meaningless because there's a fixed number of shares issued. They take the money and invest in a Tesla stock. Now, it could be there's only a million shares. What if 2 million people want to, what if a million shares, and what if people want to buy it really badly and they only have a million shares, but they have a lot more demand for those shares than they have shares? Remember, they only issued a million. The price of that mutual fund, even though it only owns one stock, Tesla, will be higher than the Tesla stock price because people are demanding, supply and demand. They want it. Same way, if they hate it, the price would be much less than a Tesla stock. That's what a closed-end fund does. I hope that's clear. That's exactly how it works. Now let's get to work answering your questions. Do you have questions about funds? We're ready for any money questions you have. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to the phones and take the first question of the day on our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, Steve and Justin. My name's Neil from Pittsburgh. I'm 24 years old, and I'm looking at life insurance policies for myself. The more I look at it, I'm getting married. I need to make sure my wife and I are going to be protected. I know it varies from the amount of funds that I have coming in and going out, but I'm looking for something to cover me for probably anywhere from like $250,000 to $300,000 for a life insurance policy. I'm currently making around $35,000 a year right now, but I was just wondering, would it be best for me to probably start as a term policy and then after about 3 or 4 years go whole life? Now, I also know there's universal, but I still don't know enough about it. I was just hoping to see if I can get your insights on it. I really appreciate any advice you get, and hopefully I'll listen to you on the podcast. Thanks for your time.
You start with a term life and you stay with a term life. You don't go to whole life or universal life, in my opinion. What you do is the term life will be very, very inexpensive. And what you do is the premium you're saving by not going to universal life, a whole life, you take that money and invest it in a index fund. But keep your term life. Life insurance is for life insurance. The universal life, whole life, they try to pretend to be investments. And yes, technically they are investments, so they're not very good. Remember what the insurance company does with that money? They invest it. So why don't you just do it directly? They're expensive. You can buy an S&P 500 index fund with the difference in the premium from term to whole life. Buy the term, don't buy the whole life, take the premium difference, invest it every month into an S&P index fund, and in 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, you'll be a lot further ahead. A lot further. That's what I would do. And you're going to get different pensions, especially from insurance brokers. They're going to tell you to do a whole life, universal life. Insurance companies are very good at selling their products. Asset allocation, using the right types of accounts. That's one of our talking points for your asset allocation, types of assets. So we're going to talk about that. I also want to talk about the traditional IRA deadline of April 1st. Anybody know what that deadline I'm talking about? There is a deadline. And that goes to required minimum distributions. We got to talk about it. Also about bullish and bearish sentiment that we have right now in the market. What is it telling us? And why you should not try to time the market. So it kind of ties into that bullish and bearish sentiment. That's going to be my third or fourth talking point if we can get to it. And I do have an email question from Patrick, and so we'll try to get that too also, Patrick, if you're listening. The Dow was down 44 today, the Nasdaq down 19, and the S&P down 8. Now, you know that the Fed is meeting this week, so we know that chances are very high that they're going to raise rates. But I'm positive that the market has built that in. I don't know if the market's going to react very much to it. I just don't. You know what they'll react more to? If the Fed does not raise the rates, they'll react more to that than it will if they just raise the rates. Remember, the Fed has been very good at preparing you for this. The Fed has said they're going to raise rates 3 times this year. Of course, they said that last year, but they didn't. So they've prepared you, and I think everybody is expecting it, and therefore we all anticipate it with what we are going to do buying and selling stocks. It's already been done because we're anticipating it. The market only moves dramatically one way or another when something unanticipated comes along. And this isn't it. The Fed is getting very good at telegraphing what they're going to do. I'm finding that even if they lie about it, by the way, and they do. Maybe lie is too strong of a word. How about we say, maybe if they just don't do what they say they're going to do. I can give you some recent examples. You know, last year they were supposed to raise the rates 4 times. That was the consensus, and they warned us. Of course, they always warn us with a with a caveat, like if, you know, conditions warrant or something like that. Okay, then let's go back to QE. They said they were going to stop QE well over a year before they actually started to stop it. And they didn't stop it when they said they were going to. So, you know, you can't believe what they say, but they're getting very good at telegraphing what they think and what they think they're going to do. And they're, I think they're just trying to manipulate you and me, the stock market participants, really. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Any money questions, welcome, especially beginner questions. 888-99-TURN is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hi, my name's Steve, calling from Birmingham. I would like to ask NuScan, N-U-S. I need a buy point. So when's the buy point and what's how much should be? I'll listen to your podcast. Thank you.
Okay, buy point for NuScan, NUS, is the symbol is really easy at $47, $48 a share. That's a buy point. Network marketing of personal care products and nutritional supplements under the NuScan and Pharmanex brands. Pharmanex, I've never heard of that. So that's what NuScan does, NUS. It is a $2.6 billion company. They're going to make $3.45 a share next year after $3.15 this year, after $2.91 last year. So it's a very steady, good income. The growth of sales is not nearly as steady or consistent as earnings. And, of course, that's always disturbing. For instance, sales fell 7% in the most recent quarter. Before that, the sales were up 6%, and the quarter before that, up 7%. Before that, down 13%. So it hasn't been as consistent as you would like. That's always an issue, and it has some debt. But it's a good, solid company. Not telling you it's not. It's really solid, and mutual funds have been net buyers of it for the last year. It's not one of my favorite companies. It has really good return on equity. Why is it not? Because of the sales techniques, it's more of, you know, you get people to sell your products, kind of like Avon does, and you get people to sell your products, and you make a little piece of their sales, kind of pyramid-ish. And I'm not keen on that. I'm just not. It's a good, solid company, though. And again, the buy point is between $47 and $48, and it's now at $50.42. So it's really not too far away. Why is that a buy point? There would be a good question. It's because that's been at between $47 and $48 twice. Once in December, and it started to move up, and then it fell to that again at the end of February. And now it's moving up again from that. So that's like a double bottom. And that's a good indication that that's strong support. Okay? This is the Best Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. The number is 888-99-CHART. That's our live listener number. Live always, 4 to 5 Pacific time. So give me a call. 888-992-4278. Excuse me. Okay. Here's why you should, we have various talking points, right? And one of the talking points we have is trying to time the market. It has never, ever been very easy. Matter of fact, you can say that you cannot really do it. It's almost impossible. Most experts are only right about 50% of the time. That means they're wrong 50% of the time. Well, you can flip a coin and get that result. Historically, because we all know that the valuations of the market right now are very high. And historically, peak valuations have coincided with market tops. So we know that the market's near a top or at a top. But they have no predictive powers. They don't predict the top. They don't say, okay, oh, it's a historic value. Okay, this is the top. We don't know that. It could stay this way for a year, 2 years, 3 years. I only can tell you that from these levels, high historical price levels in relationship to all their fundamentals, that is an indication of a top. Okay, and that prices will correct. What's the signs of a top? Extreme PE ratios. We have that. High profit margin. All-time high profit margins right now on many sectors of the market. Late stage economic cycle, which we are. But we don't ever have any idea when the market is going to have a correction or a bear market. I can tell you this. We have bear markets when recession hits. Are we even near a recession? I don't know. When I say we're in late stage economic cycle, well, how late is it? What if it can go on for 2, 3, 4, 5 more years in this late stage economic cycle? This is why you can't predict. Now, what I don't mean you can't do anything about it. What you can do is recognize that we're at high valuations, so you might want to start reducing your risk level into the market. You can do that. When you take profits on a company you're selling because it reached your target price or it's gotten too big of your portfolio, well, you don't have to reinvest that money immediately. You can be very disciplined and look for something that's really inexpensive. Warren Buffett is a perfect example of that. He puts billions of dollars on the sideline, lets it build until he sees the value. Then he'll jump in with all that billions of dollars. And he doesn't try to time the market. He doesn't try to buy the bottom. No. He just recognizes when everybody's panicking. That's when he buys. See, you can do things. You can't. You just can't time the market. You can't say, okay, I'm going to get out here and then get back in there. You can't do that. Doesn't mean you can't cut back or be a little bit more cautious, taking profits. And when you do buy something, you know, make sure it's in a sector that is not too expensive. So it's fun. I mean, there's things you can do. You just can't time the market. Don't try it. It just doesn't work. Anybody who's ever tried it, if you are right the first time, it's a big mistake. Because then you think you're going to be right all the time. And you're not. Let's go to Goal in Fremont. How you doing, Goal?
I am doing good. Hope you're doing well, too.
Thank you. I am.
I have a question on Etsy, E-T-S-Y.
Uh-huh.
What do you want? I have some shares, and I'm looking to dump it. I wanted your take on it.
Okay, let's look at it. ETSY is the symbol, everybody. It's a $1.1 billion company, so therefore it's small cap. Provides online and offline services which enable people to buy and sell handmade goods via Etsy.com. Okay, so it's a marketplace. They are growing about 20 to 30% every quarter in sales. Earnings are going to be 3 cents this year and 22 cents next year. Before this year, though, 2017, they never made money. Never made money. So next year they're going to make 22 cents a share, and it's a $10.04 stock. Okay, so that obviously expensive. Because a 20 PE would give you, what, $4.40. So a 40 PE gives you $8.80, 40 PE. 40. So you, and it's a $10 stock. So you can see it's really kind of expensive. And you want to sell it? You say you own shares right now, Cole? Did we lose them? I guess we lost them. Looking at a chart, and that's how I would go by, it fell sharply from $12.50, $13 all the way down to, well, what was that? About $9.50 or so. And now starting to make, the last 3 or 4 days, starting to make a little recovery to $10.04. Well, obviously, if it falls below the most recent low, you just get out because you don't know where it's going. Okay, and it's overpriced. So any disappointing news will hit it hard. You're going to hope for a recovery. You might get a recovery to $11 a share, which is about 50% of the fall. And that would be a get-out point. But for me, I would just get out now because it's just too expensive. And, you know, it's too expensive. I don't like holding on something that's just expensive. We're at the halfway mark, everybody, on this Tuesday Invest Talk. Remember to save the date. What date? March 25th is our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference in San Jose. And you can register right now at investtalk.com. It's $45 per person. Right now, let's hear your money question. 888-99-CHART.
Part of the InvestTalk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com.
And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary. Our podcast continues next. But first, this from KPP Financial. When you change employers, Steve says you have some important choices to make.
The 401k investor has four options.
Leave it in the old employer's 401k, roll over to the new employer, roll over and move the assets to an IRA, or a choice that many unfortunately make.
Cash out the proceeds, pay in the taxes, and the 10% penalty.
The worst choice.
Think about all the decades of tax-deferred compounding capital gains that you're missing.
But even when you make the smarter choice, there are details to get right.
One of the most important services we can perform is help our clients roll their old 401k plans into IRAs. That's the smartest thing to do.
So why not get in touch with a 401k rollover expert at KPP Financial?
If you have questions about your 401k account or maybe the one you left behind at a former employer, send me a note.
Just click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com. Invest Talk continues now. Next time, it's tempting to sort of list by expenses and pick the cheapest one, but that may not provide the best fit for you. Choosing funds, it's more than low fees. That's just one of our topics next time on Invest Talk.
888-99-TALK. Charlie, let's go to Bobby in Mountain View. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for taking my call. Just had a quick question. What are your thoughts on Apple, AAPL? Are you bull or bear, or are you just about neutral?
Well, I'm kind of neutral at this point. I've been bullish for quite some time, but it's moved up nicely, right? We all know that from the beginning of the year. I mean, it was like $100, a little over $100, $107, something like that. Now it's at $138, and it's still not over. It's still not over expensive. It's not. But the stock has historically been very, very inexpensive. Its five-year range for Apple, everybody, and everybody knows who Apple Computer is 10 to 17. And, it's going to make $8.94 this year. And that means it's right at 17 PE. Next year, it's going to make $10.15. So that makes it more like a 13 PE. But, their sales growth is kind of slow. 3% last quarter and kind of shrinking the few quarters before that. But, Bobby, I think they're going to have a really good product cycle this year. That's what I'm thinking. And I think everybody else is thinking that, too, and that's why it's run up. So if you own it, I would be more inclined to want to take some profits here, not necessarily buy it. Okay?
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you.
Apple, AAPL is a symbol, everybody. I still like it. We own it in our managed accounts. Just so I let you know. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Steve. I was wondering if you can look at OCLR, and I bought some today. What your opinion might be?
Okay. OCLR is Ocular Inc. O-O-C-L-A-R-O. Ocular. Manufactures transmitters, modulators, receivers, transducers, those kinds of things. Laser chips and amplifiers used in optical networks. Excuse me. Anyways, it's a $1.3 billion company. It's going to make 76 cents this year after only making 17 cents last year, so that's really good. And 82 cents next year. Remember, it's an $8.10 company. So 82 cents means the PE is at 10. Ish, even a little bit lower. The five-year range is 14 to 36, so it's really at the low part, and sales are growing very, very fast. Matter of fact, they've been accelerating the last four or five quarters. So those are all good things. And, of course, the stock has moved up. It's OCLR. Let's see. That doesn't look. I'm looking at the chart here. Yeah, it's run up very nicely from just a couple of years ago, as you probably have seen. Let's go to a longer. I'm going to try to pick up a longer-term chart. Maybe I can find some hints there. 1 year. Let's do that one. Update it. The debt is very low. I mean, it looks really strong. From a fundamental view, it looks like very strong. And it looks like from a technical view, it's fallen from $11 down to $8.10 recently in the last month or so. So it looks like it's going to set itself up to be a good buying opportunity here. You got to be a little bit patient. The 200-day moving average is at $7.80. And so you want to make sure it holds that. I think it will, but you're going to have to wait for that. You want to wait. Because you like to want to buy a stock on strength. You would like to see it stop falling, and it hasn't done that yet. I think it's a good, fundamentally, it's pretty strong. It's fairly inexpensive for a high-growth company. So I like it. I like it, Mike, but you might just be patient because we might be in for a correction. The market's kind of acting kind of funny, and that'll give you a great time to buy it, okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Sam in Cupertino. How you doing, Sam? Want to talk about Starbucks?
Good. I wondered your opinion whether this would be a good time to enter Starbucks.
Starbucks. Everybody knows who Starbucks is. If you don't, you live in a cave somewhere, because how can you not know who Starbucks is? SBUX is the symbol. It is a $79 billion company. For a company that just sells coffee, it's huge. Almost an $80 billion company because it sells coffee. And why is that? Because it's growing so fast in the recent. It has 25,000 coffee shops worldwide, 15,000 plus in the U.S. And, of course, they sell some food items, and now they sell coffee beans, and they do different things. They're going to make $2.13 this year. This company's made nothing but money every year for years and years and years and years. Next year, they're going to make $2.45. It's a $54 company. So that makes it, what, 21, 22 PE? And the five-year average is 24 to 39. So you say, well, that means it's below the five-year average. Well, that's true. But their sales growth in the recent four or five quarters have fallen to like the high single-digit level. So their sales growth is starting to come down. So they no longer deserve a 24 to 39 PE. So you got to be careful. Now, looking at a chart, it looks like you're going to get a buying opportunity in the low 50s here, and at 54.27. You want to wait till it stops falling, wait for you to see some strength come into it, and that would be the point to pick it up, Sam, if you want to buy Starbucks. But try to remember, it's turned into a big blue chip company, no longer the high growth company that it used to be. Okay?
Do they do dividends?
I'm sorry?
Does Starbucks do dividends?
Yes, they pay a 1.8% dividend. And I'm sure that's going to go up over the years. I'm sure it is, because it's a blue chip company. They're going to start paying dividends. Sam, appreciate the call. Thank you. Okay, well, our talking point today about asset allocation. Are you holding your assets in the right type of account? Okay, and what that means, is it a tax-deferred account? Should you have this stock or this ETF or whatever, and it's tax-deferred, or should it be a taxable account, or does it matter? And in essence, it does matter. It does. Because in a non-taxable account, like an IRA, let's say, you might want, I know a lot of my clients like to put the more risky assets in them. Why is that? Because when they take capital gains, and they're more active, they don't have to pay any taxes on that. So they kind of like that. Also, with high dividends now taxed at capital, you know, not longer taxed at your ordinary income rate tax, you might want to hold high paying dividends in a non-taxable account. It's all that, you know, I can't advise you because I don't know what you're doing with your assets, but the type of account, taxable versus non-taxable, should have an influence on what type of positions you have in there. Doesn't mean it has to be dictated to you. No, there's no, you know, it's not that kind of rule. It's just that whatever you do, you want to make sense taxable wise and what assets you hold in the taxable and non-taxable accounts. I mean, in taxable accounts, you might want to hold higher returning assets with low tax consequences, and low returning assets with high tax consequences, you can hold in either. So there, if you want to get more details, there's an article on our website. You can read about it. And it's just a matter of thinking about what you're doing tax-wise. What is it going to do to you? Okay? I'm looking forward to meeting with listeners tomorrow in San Jose. This will be our, I do this every month, as you know, either in San Ramon or San Jose, or both. If you're thinking, you want a second opinion about your portfolio, you can meet with me. It's about an hour-long review. They are strictly informational. Also, I'll be meeting with listeners following our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference on the 25th at the San Jose Hyatt House. If you're not near our California offices, I also can meet with you via Skype or the telephone. It's pretty easy. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review. BJ and Fremont is holding.
How much time does it take to properly manage a retirement portfolio? Do I need a living trust? How much life insurance should I have? Should beginners start out with individual stocks or funds? How much of my portfolio should be in dividend-paying stocks? All important questions. If you're looking for answers, you're welcome to ask the financial questions that are important to you right now. 888-99-CHART is our direct line.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to BJ. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Steve, for taking the call. I always enjoy your show.
Thank you.
So my question is about a stock called Cognex, CGNX.
Yes.
I own some shares of that, and I'm wondering if this I should continue to hold or take some profit off, and what's your recommendation here?
Yeah, well, congratulations. It's worked very, very well. It's done nothing but go up since bottoming last May. So, it was bottom about, what, $35 or so, and now it's $79. So, from that period, it's doubled in price. It's CGNX, Cognex Corporation. It's a $6.8 billion company, so a mid-cap. I'm trying to move toward the large cap. Manufactures modular vision systems that emulate defects, verify assemblers, and automate production. That's what they do. They make machines to make things. They're going to make $1.96. They've made money every year forever and made more money every year forever. They're going to make $2.31 next year. So, and last year it was $1.75. So 12 to 18% increase in earnings. Sales of recent quarters up 32-38%. So the sales weren't nearly as strong. So they've had a really good run. But it's a $79 stock, going to make $2.31. So that means that's about a 40 PE-ish. And the 5 years is PE range, 17 to 47. It's a very good stock, BJ. But I think you might want to be more on taking profits than anything else. So I think your thinking is correct. You might want to draw a trend line. And if I'm doing this right, my trend line is about $75 right now as of today. And it's at 79. If it breaks below the trend line, BJ, then sell it. Because what if it keeps marching up on you? You'll be very unhappy. Yeah. So you can use a 10-day moving average or a 20-day moving average. The 20-day moving average is at... Is that 70? No, that's a 50-day moving average. So you can use like a moving average. The 50-day moving average is 70, and that's what, 13% below. So that's probably too far down. I would use a trend line, I think, starting drawing a straight line back in November and connecting the bottoms, and that looks like about 75, 76. And if it drops below that, I'd take my profits. It's a really good company. I might just take half my profits, but I would wait for a weakness before I do that. Okay, BJ?
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations. CGNX, Cognex Corporation, everybody. Looks pretty good to me. Okay. What's the deadline on April 1st? Okay. It's the IRS deadline of April 1st for those people who turned 70 and a half last year to take their required minimum distributions out of their account. So if you turned 70 and a half last year, you have till April 1st, not 15th, to take your required minimum distribution, okay? And this means your simple IRAs, your SEP IRAs, and your regular IRAs. After that, every year before December 31st, you have to take your required minimum distributions. You got to do it before year end. But the first year you reach 70 and a half, you get to April 1st of the following year. Do not forget. You know what the penalty is, by the way? It's one of the highest penalties there is. If you, whatever shortfall you don't take, okay, whatever, let's say you're supposed to take $10,000 and you only took $5,000. The required minimum distribution out of your account was $10,000 and you only took $5,000. The IRS will penalize you 50% of the shortfall. $2,500 on that scenario. It's not like a 10% penalty or anything like that. No, it's 50% of whatever you were supposed to take and what you did take, whatever your shortfall was. Do not make a mistake here. Okay, and remember, you can add your IRAs and SEP IRAs and symbols all together and just take the money out of just one account. You don't have to take the required minimum distribution from each account. That's not necessary. Now, you got that. April 1st, if you turned 70 and a half last year, you have required minimum distributions. Required minimum. Best remember, April 1st, if you turned 70 and a half last year. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. Our last segment of the hour is coming up. I mean, we're into it. But we still can fit you in. Any questions you might have, 888-99-CHART. Okay, let's go to Thomas and Hayward. How you doing, Thomas?
Hey, Steve. Good afternoon. Fine. How are you today?
Good. I thank you for the call.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for your program. I love it. A friend introduced me, and I'll never look back.
Appreciate it.
But I wanted to give you a call today regarding AMD, Advanced Micro Devices. Mm-hmm. I got into AMD a very long time ago, a couple of years ago, when it was very low and in the $2 range.
Ooh.
And it has spiked up quite a bit recently. I'm seeing a lot of news. I want to get your take. Should I continue to hold? Should I dump it? What do you think?
I don't think you should dump it, but I do think you should take some off the table here. Because it's moved up very, very rapidly in a pretty short period of time. Well, only because the earnings have turned around and sales growth has turned around. And there's been a lot of good news coming out of AMD. But now, you know, it's going to make 29 cents. It's a $14 stock. That's not cheap. That's 29 cents next year. This year, it's only going to make 7 cents a share. So all that earnings good news is built into the price. So if there isn't any, Mel, let me tell you this. Thomas, if they don't meet those numbers and they disappoint, the stock is going to fall like a rock. So I would take some off the table if I were you. If you bought it at $2 a share and it's now $14, congratulations. That's a huge return. Okay?
Yes, sir. All right. Good deal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Nothing goes up forever, everybody. There are limits. Let's go to Mel in San Jose. How are you doing, Mel?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I just wanted a quick rundown of your conference coming up on the 25th, if that would be something that would be good for new investors. Or do you recommend any other conferences of yours?
Well, you know, I would love everybody to come to all my conferences, but, you know, the reality is that I know that some of them are a little more sophisticated than others. This could be, it's not a beginner's conference, but it's not either, not also an advanced conference. We're going to show people on the internet how to, you know, the first part is going to show you how to do research, you know, how to find stocks, how to filter through stocks. And then at the second part is we're going to show you how what we do and what is necessary. So when you get to that part, it's going to be a little bit more in-depth than the first part. But if you're someone who has an understanding of stocks, the first part is going to help you a lot as far as research. Instead of, you know, wait until you hear somebody on TV talk about a stock or look at a list of stocks someone printed, that's not a good way to pick stocks. You know, you have to do your own research. And we're going to show you using some tools on the internet how to do that. I think that's going to be pretty valuable for people. But, it, you know, I don't want to say it's going to be simplistic because it's not. It's not going to be simplistic.
Oh, okay. So, and one last, would it be beneficial to, for your meeting tomorrow? I believe it's scheduled tomorrow.
Yes. Would it be better going to these going to the conference?
Yeah, I think it's on the 5th. I think it's tomorrow.
Oh. Well, yeah. You know, what, I sit down in individual meetings. I usually just go over people's portfolios and I tell them, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of their portfolios. And if they want to know how what we do, I show them what we do. I show them my own personal portfolios and what it does and, you know, our performances. Because I buy the same thing for me as I do for myself. So I make sure I show everybody. I try to be as open book as I possibly can. And that's what those meetings are about. Take a look at your portfolio and, you know, maybe your life situation, maybe tell you if you're not saving enough or you're not investing enough because you're too old and you haven't got enough money. Yeah, that kind of thing. I try to be gentle about it, but I don't pull any punches either.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Okay,
good.
Mal. So, all yeah, right, love to see you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Had an email question, this is from Patrick. And what happened is he has an ETF that has a stock in it that was bought out. Okay? And it really doesn't matter what the stock is. But he wanted to know, my question is, what does an ETF like this do to the holding now that it was bought by another company? This happened to be Mobileye and bought by Intel, right? Do they sell it? The ETF only has 56 holdings, and the largest is Mobileye at 11%. Also, what normally happens to the price of the ETF going forward? Okay, simply put, it's just like if you owned it in your portfolio. The ETF owns it in their portfolio, and someone buys the stock, well, your portfolio reflects the value of the purchase. Then either you get cash or you get Intel stock for it or a combination of both. And that shows up in your portfolio. And it'll show up in this ETF. And then they can decide whether to keep the Intel or sell it or reinvest the cash if they get cash. It's true for every portfolio, including mutual funds. Company A buys Company B, it just reflects the value. My time's up for this hour. If you'd like to contact me directly with a personal message, just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. That's an email that comes directly to me. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. In behalf of Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, I want to thank you for being with us today. And let's plan on getting together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.